Amazon has everything for back to school. Zebra lunchbox? Check. Cool Adidas gear like t-shirts, shoes, and backpacks? Check. Triceratops folders and pencils? Check. Laser cat t-shirts? Check. Get your back to school shopping done now at amazon.com/backtoschool and enjoy free shipping on millions of items. No need to leave your home or hassle with crowds. Amazon.com. No better place to get everything back to school from A to Z.
Straight out of Austin, Texas, it's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 84, brought to you by Hook'em.com and our friends at Bud Light. I'm Cedric Golden, and I am joined by the Duck, Kirk Bowles, and our friend, frequent contributor to the podcast, and rap fan, Mike Craven. Before we get to the recruiting, and we know National Signing Day is coming up
in a
very
week.
Soon. Kirk was surprised, Mike, that you are a rap fan. Why do you think that?
Yeah, how did that happen, first of all?
Because I was born in 1985. And if you were born in the mid-80s and you grew up in the 90s, you listen to rap music. No matter where you're from or what you're doing, you listen to rap music.
And that man has zero appreciation for rap.
Exactly.
Have you ever even heard a rap song?
I have heard a rap song.
Where?
I went and saw Hamilton in New York City.
That doesn't count.
Yes, it does count.
Did someone get shot at Hamilton? That's when you know you've been at a rap event.
Yeah, I think Alexander Hamilton got shot.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be a black person. Come on. Got to be a black person. Got to be
authentic.
Why do
you got to bring race into
it? Because Biggie and Tupac got shot.
Is that right?
And guess what? All the great white rappers, Eminem, Vanilla Ice, Macklemore, still alive. You're not a great rapper until you've been shot.
Oh, is
I mean, it is.
Not that I would recommend that.
Not that I'd recommend it, but you know what? You've steered the show off the tracks.
Hey, you know who else listens to rap?
Who?
Recruits.
Recruits listen to rap. Horrible segue.
That was a great segue.
But labeling a group of football players based on their appearance, assuming they like
rap.
They're young.
Okay, who's the favorite rap guy of all these recruits?
Most of them say the Migos, Kendrick, Kodak Black,
right?
Somewhere around
there.
See,
he speaks the language. And, that's how he's recruiting.
I got a 12-year-old.
And Cardi B.
Cardi B is big. Nobody wants to say that on record, but they love
Cardi B. She is. All right, this recruiting class, number 3 in the country from the ratings I've looked at.
Yep.
I just wanted to ask you about a couple of guys. Not banging my chest. I'm from East Texas, and we produce the stud horses that go all over the country to make these college football programs great. Let's talk about the Carthage running back. Mm-hmm. First of all, Keontae, he's got his name's got 3 vowels in a row. I don't know if that's legal. They may have to put an apostrophe in there or something. Mm-hmm. But Keontae Ingram from Carthage, 187. 4,000 rushing yards over his last 2 years. Texas just hasn't had that home run hitter. Since Jamal Charles and Ramontz Taylor left, Jonathan Gray was a disappointment.
Malcolm Brown and Jonathan Gray were supposed to be.
Malcolm Brown was largely a disappointment, even though he's in the NFL.
So,
is this the next great running back? Are we sure? I know the high school tape don't lie, but will he come in here and make this running attack great again, Mike?
That's the plan, and what I like about Keontae Ingram is he's not just a rusher. I mean, he puts up 50 receptions a year. He blocks. He's a 3-down running back that has a really good relationship with Stan Drayton, and Stan Drayton, his recruiting pitch to Keontae throughout the whole process is, you can be the next Ezekiel Elliott.
Wow.
He sees that kind of upside.
You're kidding.
Sees that kind of upside. Right. Sees that kind of upside with him because he's probably around 200 pounds now, probably be about 210, 215 by the time he gets to campus. And with Keontae, the only reason he didn't sign early is he was playing for a state championship three days after the early signing period. So he didn't want to distract from his team and what was going on, and he should be a guy who signs on the dot on February 7th.
Yeah, and so you're describing him as a difference maker, right? And so you're saying he's better than Tonio Carter, Daniel Young,
Yeah, I think Keontae Ingram's the best running back to come out in the last couple of classes. I mean, he's an all-around running back. If you look at Danny Young, if you look at Tenille Carter, there was a couple things that they couldn't do, and there still are probably a couple things that they can't do. Keontae Ingram's got to prove it at the college level, but he is somebody that has three-down potential and can do all the little things, stay on the field.
But he's not better than J.K. Dobbins, right?
He's not probably the upside of Dobbins just because he doesn't have that same speed.
Well, I know that most of the guys that Tom Herman's losing to the pros are defensive guys, particularly in that secondary. Holton Hill is no longer coming back. Deshaun Elliott's gone. There's a couple of safeties that they brought in. B.J. Foster from Angleton, the top-ranked safety in the 2018 class. When you read that, you're like, you get excited, but then at the same time, the first thing that pops into my mind, and I'm going back to East Texas again, Brandon Jones was the best safety in the country coming out of Nacogdoches, and Brandon just hasn't given them what we thought he would give Texas. How do you think it's going to be different with B.J. Foster?
And recruiting's like that. It's like the draft. You know, you don't know exactly what you're going to get. It'd be a lie to pretend this is an exact science, but B.J. Foster's a lot bigger than Brandon Jones. He's a lot more physical than Brandon Jones. Maybe not quite as fast, but still a 4.45 electric timed 40 type dude. He was at the opening twice. He's always been a freak. The thing for B.J. Foster is going to be learning how to play safety. He was mostly a running back at Angleton, and he's early enrolled. He's going to be here for the spring, and so he'll have a chance to get, you know, in spring practice, learn the defense, and get acquainted to the defensive side of the ball. Texas's best five players in this class play in the secondary. Mm-hmm. You know, it's three safeties and two cornerbacks that are really, truly elite players. And so in the Big 12 against these kind of offenses, Tom Herman was selling the fact that you can all get on the field, that you can all play early. Like you mentioned, guys were leaving early. And, you know, in this conference where everybody's in four wides, you can get, you know, your base defense is nickel.
Oh, of course.
And so it's a lot easier to recruit those secondary guys.
Do you think all of them would contribute, or is any of the five a little raw and might be a redshirt even, or just play special teams maybe?
You know, I think they're all going to come in expecting to play. Deshaun Jameson, he's a slot kind of cornerback, nickelback. He may be somebody who doesn't see the field other than special teams early just because Texas has P.J. Locke to play at that position. But the other guy, you know, Anthony Cook, the cornerback, he's already on campus. Caden Stearns from Cibolo Steel, the safety, he's already on campus. B.J. Foster's already on campus. So a lot of these guys are committing early and now enrolling early so they can get a jump start, because their goal is the NFL. And the fastest way to get that is to get on the field. And, you know, their plan is to play as true freshmen. And Tom Herman, after a 7-6 season, looked at all of them and said, there's places to come play football.
That's a good place to go heavy on DBs if you play in the Big 12, no question about it.
Well, we've all talked ad nauseum about the offense and how it struggles over the last couple of years. It all starts at quarterback. You got to have elite talent there, unless you're Nick Saban, to win in college at quarterback. Cam Rising, is he going to make any noise in that room, or is this going to be a two-quarterback thing, you think?
I mean, I feel like he will. This is the – you know, Tom Herman inherited Sam Ehlinger. Even though he signed him and that's his recruit, you know, there was no way to push Sam Ehlinger out the door.
And he loved Sam.
Yeah, absolutely. But this was Tom Herman's first chance to look at every quarterback in the country and pick his couple. And he only offered about six of them, and so two of them commit. So he got guys that he thinks fits his offense. And I think that's where Cameron Rising can make his dent is he knows Tom Herman's offense. He was recruited by Tom Herman at Houston. Tom Herman recruited Cameron Rising's older brother, who eventually went to Arizona State. So he's known the Rising family for a while, and he's coming from California to Austin with the idea of enrolling early and getting to compete for that job. Because even though Sam Ehlinger played well as a true freshman, there was a few games there where he had questionable decisions.
Oh, yeah, he was spotty.
Oh, my God, especially red zone.
And well, especially in the end of games, too. Yeah.
And if you're Cameron Rising, you're watching that, and you're seeing the defense and how well they're playing, and you go, okay, if we get an offensive line going and somebody who knows the system, maybe I can be that guy that pushes them over the top. That could or could not be true, but that's how they recruit things.
Well, plus Bushell having the hip surgery, who knows if he'll be available for spring.
Who knows if he'll ever be the same again?
Yeah, you don't
know. It's hip surgery, man.
Absolutely. It's not good for a quarterback.
There's no such thing as a minor hip surgery.
But Cameron Wright, he's a thick guy.
Yeah, he's a big dude. More of a pocket passer than you would think, like a Greg Ward Jr. or some of the other Herman quarterbacks. He's not quite that mobile, but he's as mobile, if not more, than Sam Ellinger. So somebody who can, you know, you saw a lot in this Texas offense on 3rd and 3 when the play didn't go right.
Mm-hmm.
Texas didn't know what to do. They went for it a lot on 4th down and stuff like that. I think Tom Herman is used to a quarterback who goes and gets those 2 or 3 yards.
Right.
And Cameron Rising, Casey Thompson, both of the quarterbacks in this 2018 class are very capable of doing that with their legs.
How much do you know about Casey Thompson? We know that his dad played at OU and had a spectacular fall from grace off the field, but how much do you know about him? And is he one of those guys that, you know, is probably going to redshirt, or do you think he's got a shot to actually make noise next year?
Out of him and Cameron Rising, I think Casey's probably the most likely to redshirt, just because he doesn't have the size. He needs to get in the weight room, get a little bit bigger. He's not as physically developed as Cameron Rising is right now, but he's really fast. He's a true dual threat quarterback. I went and watched his last game as a senior up at Newcastle, and he put up a lot of big numbers. I don't know if the competition is equal to what it is here in Texas or maybe out in California, but he's the all-time state leader in passing yards. He's been a starter for 3 years. He's won a lot of football games. Clearly, his dad knows how to play quarterback, so he probably got some good coaching along the way. And he's a little bit of a wild card in this class compared to a Cameron Rising, who's probably well thought of.
What about Brennan Eagles, the wide receiver, had a good all-star game, right? Is he the kind of guy that's going to step in as a starter immediately, you think, Mike?
Texas needs more. You know, everybody talked about the offensive line and the quarterback, but they didn't have a lot of great play from the wide receiver.
No, they didn't.
It was inconsistent.
Disappointing. Right. Disappointing year.
And Brennan Eagles is 6'4". I mean, he's 4'5" guy at the Nike Combine, which they do electronically. He can go get vertical, and I think that's what mm-hmm. Texas needs in this offense, is somebody who can, you know, consistently get over the top, get people out of the box. Colin Johnson, you know, John Burt, some of those guys were asked to do it, but they never did it consistently.
No, they didn't.
He's another guy that's already on campus, so he's going to get a chance to show that he's ready to do that. And physically, he's as ready as anybody in this class. I mean, he looks like a linebacker.
For Tom Herman to put together a class like this and coming off of a winning season, even though many of us thought they'd win 8 or 9 games, how important was that to book that great season with a great recruiting class, and how will that pay dividends for him moving forward?
It was incredibly important because the last recruiting class, he only got 2 months to work, and it wasn't the highest rated, and he got a lot of questions of, okay, can you recruit with Ohio State and LSU? Well, he's answered those questions. All of these guys we're talking about today had Ohio State offers, had Oklahoma offers, had LSU offers. And Tom Herman, his selling point was the future. You know, we turn this thing around without my players. If you get in here, we're going to go compete for championships. That message probably rings true for the 2018 class and probably even the 2019 class. But eventually he's going to have to go beat Oklahoma and compete for Big 12 championships and stuff like that to keep recruiting at this pace. And also what helped him in 2018, it's about 12 of the top 20 guys are from Houston. And he was the Houston coach when they were sophomores. So a lot of their first offers were from Tom Herman
mm-hmm.
when he was at Houston. A lot of their first junior days and all that kind of stuff were with Tom Herman. It'll be interesting to see in this next class if he has that many familiar ties and if he can recruit Dallas.
If you're going to own a city, Houston just
own
might
Houston.
Be that city.
If you're going to own any city in the country.
Yes.
Put Houston right there.
Yeah.
With
Houston
Los
or
Angeles,
Miami.
I was going to say next.
I mean,
absolutely.
Those are where the stud horses reside. And I just think that his time with the Houston Cougars and earlier with Rice was invaluable.
Oh, yeah.
He knows those streets now. And and he
for
can
sure.
walk into those living rooms and go, oh, yeah, I've eaten at French's Fried
yep.
Chicken.
Mm-hmm.
I
yep.
mean, he can do that.
Sure.
I'm a South Houston guy. I was raised in Missouri City, and he adopted the culture of Houston, even if it's sometimes corny on the outside.
With
the grills and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Houston makeover.
The kids love that stuff. Byron Hobbs, the first commitment of this 2018 class, I asked him, what was your first impression of Tom Herman? He's like, the first time I had ever heard of Tom Herman was when I saw him with the grills. You know, and that to us adults, that may not be a big deal. But to a 16-year-old, yeah. that's pretty cool for your coach to do that as
but
a reward.
He likes rap, too, I bet.
Yeah, he went goes to Migos concerts and all that kind of stuff.
How about Joshua Moore, the wide receiver? He's still out there? Texas
yeah,
has a chance.
He's scheduled to commit Sunday on the 4th. Okay. Texas is the only team in his top five that's from the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. And he went to IMG Academy for a spring semester and moved back because mm-hmm. of some homesickness. Right. I would imagine that with Texas being the only in-state program on his top five, that Texas is definitely the leader in the clubhouse. His brother's going to A&M, but it doesn't seem like they're going to go to the same school.
Doesn't, okay.
And but they would both like to stay in the state. Makes it easier on mom.
Right. How about what's the latest on a couple of these D linemen? You're going to be in Conroe, I think, on signing day. Joseph Asai.
Yep.
What about him? Which way is he leaning?
He's leaning towards Texas, which is a big development because, you know, over the summer and over the spring, he was very open about A&M being his dream school. And I think if Kevin Sumlin stays there, he probably ends up at A&M. But Coach Giles, Oscar Giles, really did a good job of capitalizing on kind of the uncertainty there during mm-hmm. December and January.
Yep.
And really built a relation with him, as did Byron Carrington, who's kind of the unsung coaching recruiting hero of this class. And so I think they should finish with Joseph Asai, probably with Joshua Moore, Moro Ajomo from Katy, and then they just want to add an offensive tackle like a Christian Jones from Cy Woods or something as a project. And at that point they'd be at 28 players, and you know, you would have to say job well done in 2018.
That would probably be as complete a class as anybody could hope for, right?
Yeah, I mean, last year at this time, if you put this list of prospects in front of Tom Herman and say, here's your 2018 class, he's going to take it right then. And so I think that's, you know, that's what he wanted to accomplish in this class. And outside of maybe a couple of targets, mm-hmm. he got everybody he really wanted.
You mentioned offensive tackle. They're still in on Calvin Anderson, the Rice grad transfer, who they'd like to come in and take Connor Williams' spot at left tackle. You like their chances with Calvin?
Yeah, he's enjoying the recruiting process a lot. He didn't get this out of high school.
He was at Rice for a reason. He's a Westlake kid, and undersized,
yeah,
wasn't he?
And so this is kind of the first time people have wined and dined him.
Yeah.
And so he's getting to go to all these colleges and take photos. You know,
good for Calvin.
Yeah,
enjoy
right?
it.
Go
Absolutely.
Take it. I think at the end of the day, being from Westlake, having played in Texas, he's really close with Coach Hand, new offensive line mm-hmm. coach from his time at Auburn. I think those combinations get him at Texas, but right now he's going to enjoy the process, and he should.
Hey, you look at Sam, what's more important than your left tackle protecting your blind side? I'm sure Sam, being a Westlake guy, is really pushing him. Last thing before we let you go, Junior Day's coming up. What would you say as far as just the whole early signing period and Tom Herman's approach to, you know, trying to get these juniors committed in the next month?
It's going to ramp up after National Signing Day. Tom Herman wants it to be important to the 2018 kids that they're kind of the priority until they sign,
right,
until the recruiting class
That's smart.
Is done. You know, you look at Jimbo Fisher at A&M, and he's really going after the 2019 class kids right now, and that's smart on his part because he can get a head start, and that's kind of will be his first full class. I think Tom Herman thinks he's built enough relationships with these sophomores and juniors that he can kind of let the 2018 guys have their day, have mm-hmm. their breath, take a couple days off, then start with Junior Day and really get into, you know, full go mode.
But he's waiting on Junior Day for a couple weeks, you said, right?
Yeah, it'll be in middle of February.
Right. Whereas Mac, boy, he just hit the ground running when was here. He kind of was the creator of the early signing commitments, you know, for recruiting. So,
got to say, I'm impressed with Tom.
I am too, especially after a 7-6 season that could have well been a 6-7 season when he was putting this class together. I mean, without the results to show for it, or at least without the wins, you know, it's impressive.
Two words: nice lockers.
What was impressive to me was how efficient he was. Mm-hmm. Texas isn't machine gun recruiting like Alabama, and you know, Alabama has already offered more kids in the 2019 class than Texas ever did in the 2018 class. You know,
but the difference is the Texas kids are actually going to probably end up playing at Texas,
right? And they're committable. They're committable offers.
Alabama guys fall by the wayside.
And I think Tom Herman has made an offer from Texas seem important again. Not everybody gets one.
Right.
So when you get one, it's a big deal. He's not just recruiting the top 30 wide receivers and we'll figure out who comes. He's really isolating on certain guys. And that family-type atmosphere has really done well mm-hmm. for him so far.
Plus, he likes rap. We know
he
that,
loves
right?
rap.
Do you think early signing period mixed results? Do you think it's going to here to stay in December? Or
the kids love it. The coaches not so much. I mean, you got to remember, for these kids, this gets exhausting.
I mean,
by the time December rolls around, they've, you know, 4 years of football. They pretty much know where they want to go. They've taken their official visits. They just want people to stop calling them.
And the stud horses are still playing.
Right. You know, exactly. They're going to let the students take official visits in the spring now. That way it doesn't, you know, conflict with their football season and playoffs and stuff. So I think you see a lot of people do that early, because with the amount of information of social media nowadays, you kind of know where you want to go.
I would think so.
By the time you start your senior season, you know what coaches you've formed with. You know what players you've formed with. Really, the only thing you're watching is if it just goes into the tank, if your head coach is about to get fired or something like that. Other than that, I mean, you know, how much do you really need to know more about these schools?
Because
they started so early.
You know, it'd be interesting if you had to say, okay, here are the top two schools for player X. If you tracked all the players, what percentage are probably going to go to one of those two schools? You know, if the coach isn't fired or leaves for another job.
Yeah, I mean, I would say for like this 2018 class, we could identify 15 of them before April. You know, weren't locks, but you talked to them and you knew that they were talking about Texas a little bit differently than others, or they'd slip up and say us or we.
Right.
You know, there's little hints here and there. And he did a good job of junior day of really forming some cliques. And again, that goes back to the Houston connection and so many of them knowing each other. This class is going to be a little bit different because it's more spread out. It's not just a Houston-centric class. There's a lot of really good players in DFW. The number one player in the state is probably from Cuero. You know, so it's going to be one of those years where he's going to have to build new relationships to have the same type of success. And he has to recruit against Jimbo Fisher in his first year of
recruiting. Where are the Aggies rated?
They'll probably be top 15, and they'll close with some really good guys. Jalen Waddell, they'll probably get Leon O'Neal back. So they'll close really well. But just like Herman had to do last year, you can't recruit these kids in a month.
I mean,
you need to meet mom, and you need to, you know, like all that stuff. You can't, but he can do that in 2019, and you always get that big first bump. This was Tom Herman's big first bump. If you look back, everybody gets that big first bump because you get to sell the future, and everybody loves the idea of the future. So Tom Herman in Texas, it's going to be interesting to see how they do in 2019, because it's been very rare that A&M and Texas has recruited well in the same time. Can both in-state programs recruit top five nationally? Is there enough players to do that, or will there be enough battles to where one's going to have to fall off? And that's going to be the interesting part of 2019.
And as far as the state talent next year, it's a great class for what positions?
Wide receivers. It's a really good class for wide receivers. And secondary, and I think the reason for that is the influx of 7-on-7.
Absolutely. I mean, knew you were going to say that.
These kids are, you know, the offensive linemen and defensive linemen are about where they were 10 years ago development-wise. But these wide receivers, cornerbacks, quarterbacks have been groomed since they were like 6th grade. I mean, they're playing like club 7-on-7 like it's AAU basketball. And so they're just so far ahead at the skill position, so it's much easier to recruit those guys. And on my end, it's easier to see where their ceiling is than maybe just a 6'6", 285-pound offensive tackle who may or may not, you know, grow into the position.
I'm glad these kids are getting opportunities because of that, but I miss 24-21 type games.
What's that?
In Texas, they just don't exist anymore.
No, you don't see that.
First to 40.
It's one-on-one football.
And
you
it's hard to spread it out.
And you try to find a single matchup somewhere, and you get your best player of the football, and you go.
Basketball on grass.
Yep.
That's what they call it. So, hey, man, we appreciate you being here. I know you got to hit that road, and thanks for all you do for the American Statesman.
Of course. Thanks, y'all.
It's Super Bowl weekend. Wow. Who'd have thought it would ever get here? You know, they're going to play that game, and then we're going to go into like 5 months of five or six months of mourning.
Oh, yeah, we are.
Because, and our wives are going to rejoice because they hate football.
Why can't the XFL be here already?
I don't know.
Are you glad the XFL's coming back?
No.
Why not?
I just don't.
Might be a one good column for each one of us.
Probably going to be bad football. As a WWE fan, I like when Vince McMahon sticks with wrestling
but not
football.
Hey, he says it's going to be a little different this year. Remember, he was going for the just below the NFL level, the high price, the Herschel Walkers, people like that. Now he's saying he's looking for more as a developmental league, not in competition, you know, getting the top college players that aren't quite good enough to play in the NFL.
And he's
there
and
may
he's
be a place for that.
And he's looking for clean records.
Yeah, you get a DUI, you're not in the XFL.
Good luck finding that one.
What are you saying, dog?
You may have to go to comb some middle schools to get players that don't haven't committed felonies.
But anyway, the Super Bowl's coming in a few days, and Nick Foles on the big stage. Okay,
you have a. Why do you sound like you think Nick Foles is going to choke?
I don't think he's going to choke because I give him all the props in the world, and
but
he couldn't have played any better against the Minnesota Vikings. Okay, this is a different animal. The Minnesota Vikings, let's face it, didn't show up.
They didn't.
Gave up 31 points in a row.
And their defense is very much better than New England's, even though New England has been playing great.
It is.
Minnesota's more talented on defense than New England.
So, I think Nick will play okay and maybe play well. You look at what Jacksonville did to the Patriots. The Patriots were there for the taking. Bortles played a great first half until his coach went in the shell.
Then the ref saved him. The refs saved the Patriots.
His own coach saved him.
And the refs saved the Patriots.
Well,
that was a scoop six for a touchdown. The referee blew the play dead. If you don't blow that play dead, and they've been taught now,
if there's any doubt, let it go
because we got replay.
That's smart, don't you think?
Yes, very smart, but
why
did he blow it dead?
I don't know.
The Patriots are then down 27-10 in the fourth quarter.
But the Patriots never get a good call. You know, they were a good call.
Oh, my God. I just want to throw this mic at you. I'm just so tired of New England.
I know you are. Well, I want to talk about that for a second, but I want to finish up with Nick Foles. Here's a guy. He's been a Pro Bowler. He threw 7 touchdowns in a game once.
Yes.
Remember? He had 27 touchdowns and 2 picks that one glorious year. You know, he's playing with confidence. And you could almost say he's playing with house money a little bit. Because nobody expect him to outduel Tom Brady. So, you know, and I like Doug Peterson, his game planning. Because remember, they had a low-scoring game with Atlanta. And then he turned Nick Foles loose. He threw deep. He had extended plays like that flea flicker, you know, and I don't know. I like to think Nick Foles is going to bring it on Sunday. How about you?
I hope so. I hope so because he's up against the GOAT. And
and he's a great guy.
He's a nice kid. We loved him in high school at Westlake and very respectful. And
yes.
It's just good to see good things happening for Nick at this point in his career. After all, he almost retired.
Yeah,
I read where he may have gone in the seminary. I mean, I was hearing things like that. So I'm very excited that he has a chance on the game's biggest stage,
right,
against the game's greatest player, to become the most famous athlete to win a championship in Philadelphia since Julius Irving.
They've never won a Super Bowl.
They've never won a Super Bowl.
And they lost to the Patriots.
That would eclipse Dr. J's.
Yep.
That would eclipse anything the Phillies have done, and the Phillies have been great. It's something about winning a Super Bowl in a tough-minded town where before a tough-minded fan base that once booed Mike Schmidt's son at a father-son game and once booed Santa Claus.
Yeah, and the Easter Bunny.
It's a rough town.
It's a nasty crowd.
And he will be a legend. He will never have to pay for a cheesesteak again if they pull that off Sunday.
And, you know, you wonder, too, about the confidence the Eagles fan base has in Nick Foles. You know, he had a great game. You know, he wasn't so good the game before against Atlanta. Didn't ask him to do that much. But, you know, I don't know. I like Doug Peterson. I like his approach. I don't know if you read. I read an interesting story about him and about how he stopped practice the week of the Vikings game. And he was, because people were kind of lollygagging around. He read them the Riot Act, and that's important. You know, I don't guess Bill Belichick has to do that.
Too much because they're scared of him.
Yeah, he will cut you. And you know what? This is the Patriots beat the Eagles for one of their Super Bowls in 2004. I think I was at that game.
I know where I was.
And that was
I was in San Diego.
The Randy Moss game. The T.O. game.
That was the T.O. game had a broken leg.
Right.
And that game, to me, cemented T.O.'s status as an elite all-time receiver.
No question. He'd never really gotten credit for that.
Mm-mm.
And for him to play hurt, and he would have been the MVP.
Had that have been Wes Welker or somebody like that, oh, my God, they would have built a statue.
Absolutely.
Terrell Owens, it's a travesty still. is not in the Hall of Fame.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, he is a top three receiver of all time.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to throw aspersions at any, cast aspersions at any of the other guys that are in there, but they know who they are, and there are a lot of them in there that cannot carry T.O.'s jockstrap.
Right. Now, the Patriots beat the Eagles in 04. The Eagles have never won a Super Bowl. Tom Brady is the only Patriot back from that 04 team.
Of course.
Team. And so I want to ask you this. If New England wins another one, is that bad for the NFL, you think?
It doesn't help.
But a lot of people like dynasties. I want that dynasty and until somebody measures up to them and beats them like the Giants did.
Well, people get tired of dynasties.
Yeah.
People get tired of dynasties. And
people got tired of UCLA basketball.
I mean, but there are certain things that fell into place for the Patriots. They made their own breaks. They were helped a little bit. Big Ben threw a game away at the end of the regular season
that pretty much
changed the face of the playoffs. The Tuck rule.
Vinatieri's field goals.
All of these things.
Pete Carroll.
It happens in a dynasty, and luck is where preparation meets opportunity.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that they lucked in anything, but I just know that they are a self-made bunch of guys, and they follow the lead of that tough-minded head coach, that tough-minded quarterback, and I think America will celebrate if the Eagles can somehow beat the Patriots, and that will open it up for everyone else to think that they have a chance.
Right.
But it's the same script. The Falcons did the league a big disservice last year when they blew that lead in Houston, because I think that would have changed whatever the word I'm looking
they're
for.
They're not as invincible.
Of the league.
The
aura would have been different. No one would have been in awe of the Patriots. And now after they get blown out by Kansas City in that first game, everybody's like, oh, finally.
Right.
It's over. But you look up, and it's never about how you start. It's how you finish.
No question.
And the best teams are always around at the end.
And the thing that impresses me almost singularly, other than Brady's magnificence, is how that team evolves every year. I mean, you look at LeGarrette Blount. What do you have, 18 touchdowns?
Yes.
And with the Patriots, that cut him. Now he's on the Eagles roster. Chris Long, pass rusher? No, he's not there. Martellus Bennett, he's gone. I mean, you look at some of the players on defense, Hightower. You know, they are constantly evolving and getting better. And that's the difference between probably them and everybody else, but especially like the Dallas Cowboys. And so, man, if you got to go in a different direction, you go in a different direction.
And you talk about how great the Patriots are. I like Mike Tomlin, and I love the Steelers. You're telling me they have a two-time Super Bowl champion quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
They have the best running back in the league in Le'Veon Bell.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the unquestioned best receiver.
No question.
Who may be just the best overall player.
He might be an MVP.
He may be the best player of this generation.
He might be.
Antonio Brown.
Absolutely.
And yet, there they are. They can't get over the hump. They are very talented to not be more of a threat to the Patriots. And I wonder if there are people in Pittsburgh now that think Mike Tomlin is a bit overrated as a coach.
No, I think there have got to be some doubters, I think, from within. I mean, you wasted, a 500-yard performance from Big Ben. And like you said, I think Antonio Brown, he may well have been the MVP, you know, this year. If it wasn't Todd Gurley or Tom Brady or but no, he played that well. So I've always liked Tomlin too, because he's kind of a no nonsense guy. But he just hadn't distinguished himself lately.
Not since he won.
I agree, and that's where Belichick sets himself apart. I heard an interesting thing from Teddy Bruschi on the radio this week, talking about the three Super Bowl championships he played on, and he said every year they changed their defensive front, their alignments. Every year they came out in something different that they hadn't done all year. Who's got the cojones and the confidence to do that?
The best coach ever.
Is that amazing?
The best coach ever. He can do it because he knows he's got total 100% buy-in from that room.
Yeah, or you're gone.
You don't have to explain why you're doing it. You just tell them you're doing it.
Yeah.
They show up and they execute the plan because Bill Belichick has the respect of everyone in that locker room.
No question. I got one other question I want to ask you. Do they need Rob Gronkowski healthy to win this
Absolutely
thing?
Not.
Why not?
They've won in the past with Gronk.
They won it last year.
They won it last year without Gronk.
Yeah.
They have guys that step up. Remember, they have Julian Edelman on this team.
Yeah, he's gone.
They haven't needed him.
Yeah.
They're about to win another Super Bowl. So the great teams react, adjust, and do what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Amendola comes out of nowhere. Brandon Cooks. I mean, they just have guys. Remember when they had Martellus Bennett? Yeah, me neither. They got rid of him. They're still in the Super Bowl.
Didn't need him.
They figure out a way, and that is 100% coaching. It starts at the top. When you're talking about the great minds to ever be head coaches in this league, he's got to be right there with Bill Walsh, with Chuck Noll, with Tom Landry, with Don Shula.
Well, I think he's the number one.
I think he's the number one. The proof's in the pudding. He's getting ready to start on a new hand.
Yeah.
And he's still a relatively young man. He's not going anywhere. I think Brady's going to hit the wall.
Yeah,
maybe
too.
I'm hoping Sunday, but I don't think he will.
I don't think it'll be Sunday.
I think he'll win. But I think next year, I think he's going to hit a wall, and that's going to be it for Tom.
Yeah.
Father Time's undefeated, Doug.
Mm-hmm. Always will be. So, you expecting a good game Sunday or not?
Not really.
You're not?
Not really.
Well, see, I am.
I'm not. I'm expecting it to be a high-scoring game.
Yeah,
I'm expecting it to be entertaining.
Right.
But I'm expecting New England to walk away from the Eagles in the second half.
Well, see.
And win comfortably by like 14 points.
Here's the thing. The Eagles ranked third in the NFL on scoring offense. Now, they had Carson Wentz for the majority of that. I understand that. But Ajayi was a good pickup. He looked good in the playoffs.
He's a fumbler. He's fumbled three times in three games.
They got good receivers and, you know, Aguilar and Torrey Smith and Alshon Jeffrey. They've got a great front four. You know, Fletcher Cox and Ingram and Curry, Jernigan, you know. And so I think they have a chance because I think Jacksonville showed that they are vulnerable. I don't know, Tom Brady in that thumb, and you said no Edelman, no Gronk, you know, and that defense has not been a shutdown defense. So
And they've never won a Super Bowl by more than 6 points. But
yeah.
I think this will be the one. And the only reason I say it, Duck, is when you come into a game like this, and Floyd Mayweather, and I'm not a Mayweather fan. I think he's done some despicable things in his life. But the one thing that he said is, you know, you can talk all of this noise and tell me what you're going to do against me when we fight. But when those bright lights come on and I walk down that aisle, it's not the first time I've done this.
That's important.
I'm not worried about the crowd. I've done this 100 times. It's your first time.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's your first time, when those bright lights come on, and Tom Brady runs onto the field, and you know that Tom Brady's not – he might have a little bit of butterflies, but they're not the kind of butterflies that Nick Foles going to have.
Well, they're going after one series.
Nick Foles going to have bats
and
flapping around in his stomach.
Even though the nervousness should have been gone, the Atlanta Falcons choked. You know, you don't blow a 25-point lead in the third quarter. Kyle Shanahan just had a dreadful – you know, second half and overtime. Well, he never got the ball in overtime. But, you know, it's just ridiculous. When you're passing, when you run the ball, you get a field goal. You don't have turnovers. So they just played right into their hands.
I'll say this. If you add up sacks and takeaways, if the Eagles can come up with a total of 7 in this game, sacks plus takeaways, they will win the Super Bowl. I just don't think they can get to that number.
Well, I don't think they're getting 7 sacks. So if they
turnovers, any combination,
you know, if they get two turnovers,
takeaways, and 5 sacks, they beat New England.
Yeah.
The only way to beat Brady is to speed that clock up in his head. Easier said than done.
Yeah, I'm not saying I'm bold enough here on Thursday to pick them, but I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe I'm just convincing myself to root for the underdog and to pull for them. So, hey, before we wrap up our show, Alex Smith, going to be a Washington Redskin.
Great pick. Good for Washington.
Were you surprised?
No, because they would have given Kirk Cousins this money by now. I still don't understand what Daniel Snyder's doing. I think Kirk Cousins is like 27 or 28 years old, and Alex Smith is 34.
Left.
And so now you jettison Kirk Cousins, and he'll probably, I would think, go to the Vikings or the Dolphins or the Jaguars, somebody of that.
That's where he should go.
That's where he should go. I would go Minnesota myself. But you bring in a 34-year-old off of a career year, that is a risk, and you give him $71 million. Big risk.
Maybe that helps Colt McCoy.
do what? If I'm Colt McCoy,
if Alex Smith gets hurt, he's old.
Colt McCoy does not want Alex Smith to get hurt. Colt McCoy is quietly.
A little piece of him.
I bet Rachel don't want Alex Smith to get hurt.
Oh, come on. He's not there for the money.
Colt
McCoy. You saying he's there for the money?
We're here for the money. Colt McCoy is quietly putting together a nice nest egg.
No, he wants to
play. And Colt McCoy does not want to get blown up.
I think Colt McCoy would go back to Cleveland if they said, you're our guy, you're starting. He's healthy. He's fresh.
You know what happened? You know why he's healthy and he's fresh?
Because he's not playing. Oh, I know, but he don't want that.
Good for Colt.
How many players, especially quarterbacks, are thinking, you know, I don't really want to play.
Jim Sorgi, Curtis Painter, Chase Daniel.
Now you're disparaging these
people.
I'm
just saying these guys.
I disagree with you 100%. They want to play.
They'll never admit it, but there's nothing wrong with holding that clipboard.
You're totally wrong.
Good for you, Coach. Stack your chips. Be able to remember what you had for breakfast in your 50s. I'm right there with you, Coach. Don't wish that upon anybody. Don't want any guy getting hurt. Make sure that starter stays healthy, Coach. And if you got to drive him around town, do what you got to do.
Okay.
Keep that gravy train rolling.
When I run into Colt in the offseason, I'm going to say, hey, Seth thinks you'd rather hold a clipboard than to play. What? Break it down for me, Colt. I'll ask him.
Yeah, and I'm sure he'll give you the answer that you want.
So.
But we all know the truth. Money and long-term health rank far ahead of playing for a bad team. Especially, you're talking about going back to Cleveland. Why do you wish that on anybody?
And Alex Smith is not a great quarterback.
He had a great year.
He had
a
great
year. Quarterback.
He had good weapons. Supposed to have a good defense, although the Chiefs didn't perform very well there. But I don't know. It'd be interesting. I'm sure the Cowboys are glad to see Kirk Cousins possibly out of the division.
Of course they are.
Exactly.
Of course they are.
So it's a stupid move for the Redskins.
No, I wouldn't call it stupid.
No, I
would.
But
I would just call it, I would call it risky.
Yeah, okay.
That will do it for episode 84 on Second Thought. We got to thank Mike Craven, the Hook'em.com recruiting writer, for joining us. We'll be back next week to wrap up the Super Bowl.
Hey, I'm going to go listen to some rap, okay?
Will you just shut up and let me close this out?
Okay, go ahead.
For Kirk Bowles, MC Duck, I'm Seth Golden. We'll see you later.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.
Amazon has everything for back to school. Zebra lunchbox? Check. Cool Adidas gear like t-shirts, shoes, and backpacks? Check. Triceratops folders and pencils? Check. Laser cat t-shirts? Check. Get your back to school shopping done now at amazon.com/backtoschool and enjoy free shipping on millions of items. No need to leave your home or hassle with crowds. Amazon.com. No better place to get everything back to school from A to Z.